KPFK Los Angeles. We've just heard the second of a four-part show produced by Bob Dobbs. The title is Who's Forgotten Furry Lint? And with me in just a minute will be the ubiquitous Bob Dobbs, but first I want to give a couple of phone numbers out. First of all, if you want some more information on this program, you can call the local outlet at area code 310-306-7330. We'll be giving that number out quite a bit during the program. Also, information, Sherman Skolnick, Skolnick, out of Chicago. It's area code 312-731-1100 or 731-1505. And with me now in the studio is Bob Dobbs.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Bob.
It's fun to be back.
Yeah, it's always fun. I got a few phone calls while we were listening to your program. By the way, when did you produce that?
Oh, remember, it was done by Bob Marshall, and it was broadcast in August 24th, 1988.
Yeah, but I thought it says here in your book that you've stepped into his body.
No, the Bob Dobbs stepped into Bob Dean's body.
Oh, well, there's so many Bobs, you know.
Yes.
Bob is everywhere.
That's why Mark said the phrase bobbing for apples last show.
This is very interesting. Bobby Dean had a girlfriend before he met Carolyn Wheeler. Her name was Carol Dyer. Bob Dyer, Carol Dyer, and Mike Dyer were not related and never knew each other.
Well, you left out the sentence that...
Carol Wheeler had a boyfriend before she met Bobby Dean. His name was Bob Dyer.
And then Mike Dyer helped Bob Marshall be removed from the air and then brought me on the air in Toronto in 1987. So you had Mike Dyer, Bob Dyer, and what was the other guy?
I don't know. I closed the book.
Oh, Carol Dyer.
Yes. That's spelled like Carol O'Connor in this.
Yes.
By the way, let me just tell you, I got a couple of interesting calls. First of all, a couple of people wanted to know about Sherman Skolnick, so I gave them number out.
Yeah, Sherman Skolnick had some very good information on the Whitewater affair on his telephone number, which changes several times a week, and he's been featuring a whole series over the last 3 weeks, and he has a very good interview with somebody from Arkansas. I think his name is Larry Nichols on right now. And you can call at 24 hours a day, so call later at night when it's cheaper, and it's only about a five-minute message, so it's not expensive.
By the way, you know, I noticed something about that Whitewater stuff, the stuff coming out of the Washington Times, the American Spectator. That's KCIA, the Moon Organization, and the Liberty Lobby seem to be the people who are really pushing this.
Well, it's that part of my tetrad management called the right wing that I've orchestrated. But I'll bounce that off. Don't worry.
Also, well, I got one very interesting call. Apparently these people are not going to give a dime to the station now because of a 10-minute sequence in your program that they said was atheistic. And they said, a lot of us who listen to your program don't like atheistic stuff, so we're not going to give you any money.
Well, they can tell them they can... thank you for broadcasting me, because one of my holy offices is Herbert W. Armstrong, and he's not an atheist, so tell him to go out to Pasadena and study Herbert W. Armstrong, and that Bob supports that operation.
Okay, I want to get to this. Thank you for sending me a copy of Phatic Communion with Bob Dobbs from...
Phatic Communion.
Well, wait a minute. Now, make up your mind, Bob. First you said it was Phatic, now you say it's Phatic.
I never said it was Phatic. You've never heard me say the word.
Oh, yes, I have.
Well, if I did, I was punning, but I begin to say it at the first time as Phatic Communion.
So you
Phatic.
So it was part of the fates then.
Yes.
Okay. Well, now I'm a composer, musicologist, and I wanna talk to you about some of the things you say in here, because you just slammed Frank Zappa in this on page 6.
Well, that's what you do when you're tetrad manager. If you look at the tetrads and all the holy offices, they all get obsolesced and retrieved and extended and flipped into. That's
well,
the process. That's
well, now, check this out. Check this out. To the extent that any individual prefers rock or serial-composed music to Beethoven, that evidence alone is sufficient to demonstrate that the individual has been bestialized in his self-estimation. No person could, quote-unquote, enjoy rock or regard serial composition as honest music unless his alienation had become sufficiently pathetic that he no longer even desired to recover those human qualities he has been denied. As for the person who likes both Beethoven and rock, that is sufficient, too, to prove that he has lost the power to listen to the content of Beethoven's music. Well, I don't know if Frank Zappa liked Beethoven's music too much, but I know he liked rock, and I know he liked serial music. And, in fact, on page 38 here, I really have to get into this with you, because obviously, you're just one of those, since you run the Secret Council team, you're just one of those Stalinist leaders who tells people like Shostakovich what is and what is not music here.
Well, have you looked at the symbol at the end of the quote? And then looked it up in the index. I mean, I didn't even say that. That's said by Lynn and LaRouche.
Well, okay, there you go. That just says, okay, let me go into this other thing.
Well, remember, these aren't my opinions, and now if you listen to the show we did on January 22nd, you'll understand why I adopted Poe's LaRouche versus Zappa in our conversation at the beginning of that show.
Now, check this out. In music, those who have no comprehension of the principles of coherent contrapuntal development, such as that of the post-1782 Mozart or Beethoven, delude themselves to surpass the classical masters by the anarchistic chromatic imbecilities of a Liszt or Wagner, or the irrational nihilism of Webern and Schoenberg. Well, I'll grant you that on Schoenberg, I guess. In scientific work, such feces-smearing artistic productions would be regarded as the bungling of illiterate tinkerers. Now, that one doesn't have a thing at the end, except unless you mean a...
Well, you have to go to the end of the whole section.
Well, that's a very long section. In fact, okay, two pages later, or three pages later, four. Okay, then IGLL, Lyndon LaRouche.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Lyndon LaRouche doesn't know beans about music, obviously, because,
Well, that's why I put quotes in there by him, so people like you can get outraged and have something to say on the air.
Because anyone who looks at Webern's sketches know that it's exactly what he's talking about here. It's not the notes themselves being something; it's the intervals in the notes. And Webern was a master at note punning, tonal harmonic punning. And Frank Zappa not only likes Webern's music, he also likes rock and roll. He writes stuff, and he's a composer.
That's right. Well, LaRouche is a devotee to visual space. He revives visual space, and visual space doesn't like punning, so there's a bias inherent in his approach, but his bias is in relation to other biases running around wrecking our civilization. So you have to look at the interplay of them. Now, you have a point of view. This is what you're expressing, which is fatal in our time. You should study LaRouche just as a counter-environment to your own musical assumptions.
Well, I can get that from Rush Limbaugh, too.
Beg your pardon?
I can get that from Rush Limbaugh, too.
Now, you can't get it in detail like LaRouche does.
Well, anyway, just for people who don't know anything about Phatic Communion with Bob Dobbs, I notice you have two books going on here, and then one of them sort of takes over at the end.
What are the two books?
Well, the one on the left side and the one on the right side.
Yes, and there are four authors within those two sides.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off on the left side with the LaRouche from page, like, 4 to 82, and on the right, as he's going along, there's Marsh McLuhan from page 5 to about page 43 or 47, and then on the right is McLuhan is followed by William Irwin Thompson, while LaRouche is still on the left, and then Croker starts on page 84 after LaRouche ends on page 82. So then Croker is on the left versus me, Bob Dobbs, because William Irwin Thompson stops at page 73, and then on the right, you have extracts from my Toronto radio shows from 75 on up to 118 or so.
You know,
and
your
on
book pages.
The left is Croker from 84 till about 106 or 108. And then Bob Dobbs is on both sides from 106 to 118. And then there's the famous memo to Prince Charles from 1987, written by me to Prince Charles, where I give Connie and Maya autobiography.
And then it's written as a conventional book.
Yes.
So
there it's parallel processing going on there.
Why did you do this?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want it to be a completely linear narrative book, and I want to indicate the interplay the essential way that the Tetra manager looks at the governance of reality and the making of new artificial environments. And so when I'm operating from Secret Council 10, I have to operate on a parallel processing way. And that's where I'm illustrating in this book. I'm dealing with LaRouche, dealing with McLuhan, with Croker, with Thompson, and my own perceptions from my own experience. So it's an interplay.
And just for people who are new to the program, what is Tetrad Management?
Tetrad Management is the way we govern from the solar government position. There's also the universal government position in the mythic stage level. But for most people, I can handle the planetary Gaian situation by operating from Sputnik levels. And that means overviewing all cultures, and each culture is a mythic stage. And the point of Phatic Communion is that I go beyond cultural mythic stages, and those four authors represent archetypal schools of thought and perception, which is the level we're in now. We're so discarnate and so involved in the theorization of cultures that we're interrelating on basic thought patterns. But thought is not just internal, it includes the sensory life, so I call it thought and perception.
So what is your basic reason for picking these, three authors I know, is Croker, McLuhan, and LaRouche?
And then Thompson.
And Thompson.
Because they each represent a school of thought, an archetypal school of thought. McLuhan represents the grammatical tradition, or the tradition of rhetoric, or the tradition of poetic wisdom, which people like Terence McKenna are trying to evoke, where they begin to consider that language is reality. So Marshall updates that position of language is reality by determining the new technologies and interpreting them as language or linguistic. LaRouche represents efficient causality. See, there are four causes that Aristotle laid out: formal causality, material causality, efficient causality, and final causality. McLuhan deals with formal causality. The basic structure of matter and energy is efficient causality, and that's what LaRouche concentrates on. He thinks a more revolutionary development will be fusion energy compared to anything that's developed on the software level by computers. So he's dealing with efficient causality. Final causality is expressed by Arthur Croker, who takes the most advanced sociological techniques of Baudrillard, Foucault, Barth, and the general postmodern scene, and injects some of McLuhan awareness, since he had written a book on McLuhan, and he is the best expression in a synopsis form of the sociological thinking, the school of sociological thinking that sort of comes out of Marx and Comte and people from the 19th century. So you have the sociological school of thinking, which is not efficient causality or formal causality. It is more final causality, worried about the final ends of things. And then Thompson, coming in with the traditional Oriental mystic or Buddhist tradition, he represents what causality did I leave out? The
if you
material
don't know,
causality.
I can't help you. The what causality?
Material causality. The four causes are formal, material, efficient, and final. So material causality deals with the relationship of man with nature and how to define man's interaction on the causality level with nature. So since Thompson represents the Gaian hypothesis, which is a retrieval of pre-literate and we could say acoustic ecological sensibility, which is characteristic of pre-literate cultures, that ancient mystical tradition, which emphasizes the private symbol of consciousness as your hidden center, which in simple terms says the mind can control nature, can control the body, Thompson represents that school of perception. So you have those four, and then Bob Dobbs is the fifth, which is the making reality we're in, which a tetrad manager has to deal with, which bypasses all four causes and is basically what I call the fifth element, which is mud, or as Finnegan's Wake calls it, the mood mud. So the new element we're in is a tetrad manager has to have familiarity with all four causalities and schools of thought, but has to manipulate them in a sense that the reality today goes past and does not refer to any one of those causalities.
Get yourself a glass of water, Bob.
Yeah, it doesn't refer to any one of those causalities, because in the television situation where we're making perceptions and making new images with no reference point to daily, 24 hours a day, then the manager is operating in a new zone that has no cultural reference point. And that's represented by the collage and transcripts of my radio show in Toronto. But the first four causalities and the first four schools of thought are a background that you need when you're trying to create effects on people.
Well, you certainly succeeded with this radio host.
Thank you.
Now with that extensive background, what's the theme for this morning?
Well, I guess Whitewater.
Okay, do you have any takes on it you want to go on before we, because we're already getting call-ins already. I haven't even given the phone number out.
Well, there's a backlog from previous shows, right?
Oh, probably.
Okay, first of all, I want to throw out a question that some callers might want to respond to. Since you can only do tetrads on human-made artifacts, man-made artifacts, tetrads do not apply to nature, then I think a big question is, can we do a tetrad on the crop circles that are manifesting around the world, and the majority of them are in England? If we can do a tetrad on the crop circles, then they are related to human species. If we can't, then if they're made by an extraterrestrial species, which I claim they are, then are they part of nature and not part of humanity? Or if there can be a tetrad done on them and they're extraterrestrial, then are they somehow connected to us? That's a question I'd like to throw out to the listeners who are interested in this show, the ones who are inclined to think along those lines. The main thing about Whitewater is I think we've got a real symbolic situation here that I glory in as a tetrad manager. First of all, I've said that Bill Clinton is a homeopathic retrieval of software communism, and software communism is the information environment that we've lived in for at least 100 years.
Wait, is there more than one kind of communism?
Yeah, there's hardware communism.
Which is?
That's the communism of up till about 1830 and 1840, where postal, railway, and the early industrial services were available to people of all classes. And that was the environment that Marx analyzed, not noticing the invisible telegraph environment of the 19th century, which was the beginning of software communism, where you had information environments that could be consumed by all classes of society, and no one wealthy person could hijack that environment and have that, telegraph, radio, electrical environment just for themselves. In other words, the idea that some wealthy person funds NBC and has all those shows made for them in particular, or demands a certain kind of shows. Nobody really can hijack with private wealth the collective wealth of the software environment.
Well, this relates to that first caller I got who didn't like the atheistic content of your show and is going to try and deny us funds because of it.
Well, that's not a problem, I don't think.
And anyway, so getting back to Whitewater.
Yeah, so software communism is the main environment of the 20th century up till about 1977, and then the software communism disappeared, and then you had the after image of both hardware communism and software communism. Reagan was the icon in American terms for that. The important thing is that by 1990, the mythic stage phase of my CD charts disappeared, and so you had homeopathic retrieval, homeopathic being a combination of hologram and homeopathy. So you had previous mythic stages expressed with tiny dilution and intensity. So Bill Clinton, as a homeopathic retrieval of the Democratic Party, but on larger terms, software communism, in this phase from 1990 to 2020, that can only last for a while. So the operations, the main theme of Bill Clinton's presidency for the first year was that he and Gore were very interested in building the information superhighway. Now, technically, we've had an information superhighway for over 50 years. And so it's interesting that software communism, as its banner technological program, would be identified with the information superhighway, in quotes. Now, the information superhighway flips out of its discontinuous homeopathic momentum in the late 1993 period, and this is represented by the collapse of TCI and the Bell Atlantic deal. All right? Now, because Clinton represents the information overload of the software communism and an attempt to bring in technology to control it, called the information superhighway, because that collapsed, then you have the metaphor for it on a personal political level of Whitewater. Now, Whitewater is the iconic image that evokes the flood of information that is software communism. It's like the Niagara Falls, which we've all been dealing with for 30 or 40 years under television, computer, satellite conditions. And it's the human scale that Bill Clinton and Hillary hope to bring back with their new administration, saying that George Bush's New World Order and what Reagan implemented was not relevant to the concerns of Americans. So the nationalist emphasis of Bill Clinton is a media ecological strategy to deal with software communism. He hoped to control it and expand it with information superhighway. That collapses in the fall, and so does Bill Clinton's image collapse. So that's the meaning of Whitewater. The word in itself is an expression of information overload.
I thought Whitewater was that stuff they got out of their still in the backyard.
Now, there you're thinking in terms of geographical locations in the United States, which...
No, I'm thinking of Everclear.
Right, but we don't live in that environment. So it's not useful to use product images or geographical images in figuring out how people relate to what's coming out of the White House, because the White House is the word that makes the market, and the whole world is resonating and involved with the White House image. So you got to have a more comprehensive, a-national, post-national image, and that's Whitewater, which is a term that any culture can understand as a waterfall or a flood.
Or a gate.
Yeah.
Well, just in a nutshell, before we go to the calls, how would you portray, you mentioned Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton as being somehow homeopathic retrievals of communism. How would you differentiate the two in a nutshell?
Well, on a simple level, Ronald Reagan was a retrieval of hardware communism and left hemisphere specialist values. He objected to the tribal effects of software communism, so he tried to retrieve the America of the 1920s and 30s, which are largely kinetic values, as I explained in the last show, the movie, radio, newspaper era. But he talked about it in terms of getting people back to work, or in terms of rebuilding community. All these industrial forms of organization was the impetus to the conservative program of President Reagan. So that is a homeopathic retrieval of hardware communism. I mean, he doesn't understand that the services in the 1920s and 1930s had many hardware services that couldn't be bought, sold, or stolen by any wealthy person. So there already was hardware communism in great extent in 1920, and software communism was beginning to flood the world with radio. So he's a homeopathic retrieval of hardware communism, and Clinton's a homeopathic retrieval of software communism, or what's called the baby boomer generation, those who built their circles of influence through computer networking. And that's been the reality for 20 years for baby boomers. So there is a definite difference between Reagan and Clinton. But they're both variations of environments that no one person can hijack.
Well, we're going to go to calls in just a minute. The number here is 818 area code, 985-5735, 985-KPFK. Before we do that, I want to give out the information line. Bob's contact in Los Angeles can be reached at area code 310-306-7330. Bob, there was a very interesting rumor flying around about this program a couple days back. Apparently someone who listens to the Ray Bream Show quite religiously, listening to the other side of things, heard that someone called in, they were talking about Whitewater, and they were relating it to the entire MENA airport thing and Iran-Contra and how that ties in together. And they said, yeah, there's this guy on KPFK named Porter, and he has knows this guy, Bob Dobbs, who's really tied into all the information on this. And then Ray Bream says, well, I don't listen to KPFK, and I don't read anything from the Christic Institute, so I don't know anything about that. But we're even making it into the Ray Bream Show.
Well, that's what happens when I show up.
Yeah, well, okay, we're going to go to some calls now. Once again, this number is 818-985-5735. And caller number one, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Bob, from the Club 22 Roadhouse here in Venice. And
is this Mark?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Mark, I enjoyed your commentary on my entertainment sex article.
Thank you very much. And this morning we have a multi-step question here for Bob, and it reads, early forms of electronic media were one-directional, basic sender-receiver apparatus, the telegraph, the radio, the basic airwave TV, and old telephones in which one person couldn't speak and listen at the same time. But now, in the post-mythic stage, with user interactive control over the media with VCRs, three-way dialing, CD-ROM, channel changers, multi-disc programmable players, and such, these tools are now part of our own ecology and our own media interaction. How do these lead to a user-controlled acceptance of a non-militarized, how does this lead to a unmilitarized acceptance of a lockdown Babu? How do these user interactive media forms lead to that unmilitarized acceptance? That's part one.
Okay, hold it, Mark. Is that influenced by Phil Chamberlain, that question?
No, it is not.
Because he's asked me that before. There's a whole tape on me and Phil talking about that Jerry Fialka did.
Okay.
Okay, you're asking, say that, how is
how does the advent of user interactive media lead to an unmilitarized acceptance of lockdown Bob rule?
Okay, well, you're thinking of military in hardware terms?
Well, just in sense of have to be socially destructive political upheaval.
Right, well, first of all technologies are military operations because they upset the previous technological cultural organization, require an old identity to be retrieved or a new identity to be forged. So all technological environments create wars. So even the post-mythic stage of electric autonomy established by VCRs and cellular phones and the technologies you listed at that point in your question, they will necessitate a new kind of war. Now, it may not necessarily be a hardware war. It could be a image warfare. And so all technological environments are militaristic. So there's a problem that you have to consider when you think about that question.
Okay. The second part of the question is, how do media icon representations of Bob, i.e. Bob Roberts, Bob Dole, Bob Newhart, and Bob Dylan, serve or disserve this purpose as well?
Well, as Chris Toomey wrote in Toronto, a review of the first CD we put out, he said Bob is a word like om, and he quotes a line that I said on the CD that Bob contains the syllable, contains all artifacts, all words, all expressions of humankind. And so I think that the American environment, since it is manipian tactility and television is the final stage of creativity, then it contains all programs. And I think, and all artifacts and all stages of history, including future hallucinated stages. So I think the all-American word Bob is a good syllable to express manipian tactility. And since the American content and kinetic space of America goes out about the world, then it seems to favor the word Bob. And I think that that's where Stang is accurate to use the word Bob, even though it was my name. It's maybe that's why he interpreted me, because I had the name Bob, because Bob is an all-purpose syllable to express manipian tactility.
And so the media are just using the word Bob to
express its own bias. And Bob goes, you know, it's an acronym that goes backward and forward. It's a palindrome.
Yes.
It
which
could
is
be
Finnegan's Wake's River.
Adam.
It could
and,
be.
And
a
when you say Bob, you know, it's a sound like wow. It's a sound that expresses more than a appellate, a name.
All right. And the last part of the question is, I've got Butch Electron here in my room.
Okay, just before we go into that. So other cultures would have other names in their culture to express it, but it becomes global under the American environment, so Bob is the preference. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do understand.
Yeah, wow. America can piggyback on the fact that it created that environment, and that is a military operation, the American environment. So Bob is the general of that, the effects of this new manipian tactile environment.
Bob, do you think it's Bob could be a stand for bias against Bob?
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
Colin.
What I hope to
and
be
last,
is a doctor for and of and around Bob to get past this manipian tactile situation we're in. So I'm biased, did you say, over Bob?
Yes, bias over Bob, B-O-B.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to project, because I don't identify with the effects that I create. And I hope the user of my situation and the student of it can get to that stage, too, which Mark is making a valiant effort to do. Okay, what you have Butch Electron there?
Butch Electron was in my room recently, and he wanted to know what was up with a former cohort of McLuhan's, Jerome Agle.
Jerome Agle has made continued doing what he did with McLuhan and Bucky Fuller. He continued making these kind of collage books for 20 years. He's still active. And as a matter of fact, you have to go through him to get copyright permissions for quoting any of those books that he's been involved in. He still lives in the on the East Coast and has had a very lucrative career in publishing.
Well, great. Did you have anything new, Bob, out recently? Or?
No, I told him to hold off because I'd like people to get more involved with my works, like Static Communion.
Well, he should do a book with you, Bob.
Yeah, he may.
Anyhow, well, until next time, we'll continue to keep bobbing for apples down here in Venice.
Right. One thing, Mark, I would say is that, I don't know if Jerry got a chance to tell you, that in your comments on mixed corporate media, you interpret mixed corporate media as something that my work is trying to be an environment, an anti-environment to. First of all, you have to realize that mixed corporate media is the anti-environment, and it is the manipian satire of us.
Okay.
And so if you think back what you said, then you'd have to interpret it on the opposite way of how you interpreted it.
All right.
Okay, that's a definition for you.
All right, Bob.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Oops, cut him off. Sorry. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, David. Bob, I liked the furry lint. That was very good.
Yeah, did you hear part one on January?
Yes, I did. I like it. It's very, very interesting. I want to ask you, are you familiar with Philip Marchand's book on Marshall McLuhan?
Yes, I helped him write it. Marchand's a Canadian.
Yes, now there's a reference in there to a interview by a reporter, and it's titled, What Did You Say, Professor?
Yes,
and that's written by a person by the name of Kildare Dobbs.
That's right, Kildare Dobbs. You see, that's what Stang doesn't understand. He thinks that Bob Dobbs, the name, refers to satirical put on of his name. He doesn't know that Dobbs is a major cultural dynasty in Canada, featured mainly by a comedian who plays a character called Fred C. Dobbs. And then there's Kildare Dobbs, was a major critic in Toronto.
I see, but that's no relationship to you.
Yes, they are related.
Ah, very good. Now, I want to ask you one more question. The other day, this is related to Clinton, kind of whitewaterish. There's a New York article out of the New York Times. Now, I kind of feel that he's following a Kennedy model. Now, apparently, he's in the process of signing an order of declassifying secret records after 25 years.
Yes.
Yes, and also this declassification, this type of order, it's kind of revolutionary in effect. Is he kind of breaking away from the power elite here and trying to upset the cards?
Yes, he is, but he represents another faction. That's the problem. All these revolutions are done by elites for elites, and he's declassifying certain areas of information to smear his competing faction.
Uh-huh. And now,
it has nothing to do with us because information's obsolete. With the new Clipper chip technology, anybody can interfere with your computer and modem and make documents and inject statements that you may have said, or they want to present the situation that you've said, and therefore anything that's presented as informative or as a document is a hologram now, and so as the public, we have no reference point, so anything presented on television cannot be proven.
Yes, now the faction he's trying to overturn, who would be the head of that faction?
I'd say David Rockefeller.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, caller, who do you think Clinton represents then?
He represents, Dr. Beter is the best analyst of these factions, these historical factions, and basically it was, according to Dr. Beter, the corporate socialists, which were the Rockefeller faction, and then the state socialists, which were the Bolshevik factions organized by the Rothschilds. Now, you notice on Furry Lint, you have a little pattern laid out there by Skolnick about the battle between the Rockefellers and Rothschilds. Now, I don't think Skolnick is trying to be anti-Semitic there. It's just that the mythic stage of gold and money was integrated and organized and could not be changed by the end of the 19th century because of the implosion under telegraph and telephone conditions. It was a global village situation back then, so that the money managers had to control who received funds on the level of the mythic stage of gold and wealth, because these were vast inherited situations that could not be sort of manipulated by intruders who did not understand the historical development of that wealth. And so on the mythic stage of money, you always have that control of the purse strings by those historical factions. And I have to deal with them on the Secret Council of Ten. Turn and Taxes is another group that's involved. The thing is that they are under the average user, discarnate user of the global theater that we all are, should not feel that paranoid about the fact that money as a stage is manipulated, because those people are swamped by software communism too. You can think of money as hardware communism. And they're endlessly in crisis. And if somebody took over the controls of the banks on that level, a new person, he or she would be so harassed that they'd give it back to the Rockefellers or Rothschilds, because they endlessly have to deal with the software communist turbulence of manipulative tactility that the mixed corporate media does to software communism. And so we have to understand the management level of the mythic stage.
Okay, let's go to a caller. And you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been up since about 2:30 sitting at my desk doing work, flipping the dial around, and I caught the program around 5 o'clock or so, or 5:30, and was just enthralled, and number one. I am a Bob also. I'm a plumber. I'm a plum Bob, as it were. And your terminology is new to me. The concepts aren't. And what you were saying about the four sides of your aspects, it reminded me of what Bucky Fuller said, but the things are an alloy in the fact that they include everything, but the sum of the parts does not equal the total. And
yeah.
So that and just the other observation that I work with an electrician who always says, get current. So getting current and getting current seems to be vital to the interests that we all have.
And that's the problem the money managers have, because they deal with currency.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have hardware currency, inside the software currency. The software currency is the situation of the word making the market. And that word that makes the market has no reference point.
You know, what, also with regards to the atheistic, you know, diatribe, I am what might be called a fallen away KPFK listener, so I'll just step up and take my turn at the plate and send you a check and get renewed, okay?
Thank you.
So, I hope to get more information like this. I'm a little scared by the volume of information and that what it triggers in me, because I am one of those people that do get involved to such a point that is, you know, with regards to what was on there, you know, but I'm trying to devise simplification, and it's a process, and so I appreciate your coherence and the opportunity that I've had, you know, this morning to reignite, you know, passion and a desire to get involved in whatever it is that you're offering and to apply it to my own situation up here in Santa Barbara.
Okay, well, Dave will give out that number for you to call.
Okay, I've got it, and I'm continuing to listen. Thanks very, very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, caller. And once again, let me give the number out again for calling in the local area. It's 310-306-7330. Information on Bob. Not Bob. No, he has to keep away from the Pinks, who are always after him. In fact, he may change locations during this program.
Yes.
Well, we just lost that caller. Okay, you've been patient. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. How are you?
Fine.
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. I wasn't expecting this. I was going to ask you a question. The neo-Nazi movement in the United States and in Germany, are they privy to the same information, you know, you're giving out, or do they know about what's going on? Or do they have an idea? Or is it just they want to promote a race war? In other words, people don't seem to understand that there is going to be a race war, and I was wondering what your perspectives are on the race war, upcoming race war.
Yeah, you're right that there's going to be a race war, and that's what I meant earlier, is that every new technological environment necessitates a new war, and the tribal effect of software communism, which we've had for 20 years, will necessitate, as long as we keep this environment bombarding and whitewatering and bobwatering everybody, will create this situation of segregation and fragmentation and tribal warfare. So the problem is the neo-Nazis or any tribe that feels indignant by the interaction with other tribes on the discarnate environment of the mixed corporate media does not understand the ground they're living in. So neo-Nazis have no understanding. They're just knee-jerk reflections of the situation. And they, as well as all other tribes, including tribes of mystical saints, the New Age bias, whatever you want to call it, the tribes that feel superior, maybe the Tibetan Buddhists, all these tribes are interacting, and we have to realize we're in a new situation that does not promote any one culture over another. It just creates a situation where no culture can impose its values on the rest of the world. So that situation cannot be remedied unless we have a media fast. And that's the beginning of collective consciousness, which would integrate the individual and the tribe to understanding the environment it's in. And the subconscious archetypes we've gone through, which are the previous technological environments, those are archetypal now, that situation has now been subsumed by a collective consciousness, which Bob represents, but we are not aware of it. We have not become Finnegans Awake, and that's the problem. Finnegans were tribe, was the tribe of Finn, and Finnegans Awake is about the battle of race warfare. And that's coming if we don't understand what we're involved in.
Well, I wish I could ask you to elaborate more, but... there will be a race war because there's a lot of, like I said, there's a mass movement in the Midwest of, basically neo-Nazi KKK. I mean, the KKK has been around ever since 1861 or so.
Yeah, since the telegraph. And they began to get feeling threatened when the electronic implosion of the telegraph environment came in.
Yeah, and they've been around for almost 100 years. And I was wondering, do they get any funding from the Rockefellers in any way? Or would the KKK fit to the Rockefellers' interest?
No, the Rockefellers don't do funding. They don't operate. See, this is the paradox. They don't operate on the paper money level. They are, their money, and this is something that it helps explain why it is hard to infiltrate them. They operate through the historical wealth that's built up with money and gold, but that collapsed in 1929. They now control information, and information is the basic power. But if you want to challenge their control of information, then they can cite the historical situation of money. Money has not existed since 1929. Money is now the poor man's credit card, as McLuhan said. So they do not fund. You have tribal groups who interpret mythic stages as they move up the corporate ladder, think they're working for Rockefellers or working for this and that or for the white race or the black race or whatever. They project that mythic stage. So the KKK is a mythic stage. And as you see in my chart, these mythic stages have all disappeared, but they're still here as hologramic after images. And people are now projecting one individual as representative of the mythic stage, and that's the holopathic retrieval. Mm. So that's the situation we're in, because every one of us on the planet in this global theater is a discarnate super angel. We have transcended all the collective group technologies or tribal situations that we all have been part of in our history, and we have to recognize that we are floating around the planet and interpenetrating all these mythic stages, yet we are beyond that. We are all kings and slaves at the same time. So, yet in that situation, we don't have a reference point, so we project our identity onto a tribal mythic stage, which can be just the stage of coal. Take the coal miners in England. They really identify with their role now, and they're proud of being coal miners. So the old industrial sense of progression from one phase of technological advantage to the next is being stymied by people retrieving their own identity through mythic technological stages. And that's the confusion we're in. And so, yeah, it's hard to figure out what I'm saying right away, but if you take time and read the book or read liner notes or listen to the CD and meditate on it, sort out the fact that all words that you're going to think in response to what I'm saying are obsolete, eventually you'll get used to that and you can start talking like a robot like myself, where I talk technically in a language that is not my personal point of view. I'm trying to say the right words at the right time.
Hmm. Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. I congratulate you on your intellectualness, and I'm hoping maybe I could maybe have access to your books and CDs, because you know, you remind me of the 1984 Orville, you know, the double speak method of terminology.
Yes, that has to be incorporated. That's a necessary product of the radio mythic stage. It's not a product of television.
Yeah, and I haven't quite gotten up there yet, so.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
I'll
but
call
yeah,
back and I'll see if I get any information about your phone number. Maybe you could educate me.
Yeah, we can do that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's move on. And by the way, if for callers who are interested, the CD is called Bob's Media Ecology, and the second one is called Bob's Media Ecology Squared. And they're from Dove Entertainment out of Toronto.
No, from Time Again Productions.
Oh, Time Again Productions. Well, what is the connection with Dove Entertainment?
They distributed the first CD that Tom Touche put out with Nelson Thal and Dave Neufeld, and they don't distribute it anymore. It was taken over by Time Again Productions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to bring up, why did Bob Marshall get thrown off the air for playing Dr. Beter's tapes?
Because it was time for me to surface, and that was in June, July, August 1987,
but what is it,
before the harmonic Bob Virgins.
What is it about the Beter tapes that offended station management?
Manager thought that they were anti-Semitic, just because he talked about the Rothschilds.
Okay, well, caller, you're on the air.
I'm not a caller. This is the anti-Bob, and I'm giving my impressions directly to the Mount Wilson transmitter.
Thank you. Now, are you the guy that was on last show? That some people argue whether you're Robert Anton Wilson or not, or are you the person who hosted Robert Anton Wilson at the Millennium Madness you had in May?
I'm not with the last show. I thought I missed your last show.
That was January 22nd.
Robert Anton Wilson is one of my henchmen.
Right. Now, so you're not the person who claims to be the Robert Anton Wilson from the universe next door.
No.
Do you know that?
No, in fact, Bob knows me as the anti-Bob.
All right.
The Bob that comes before the true Bob will actually arrive.
Yes.
But I was wondering, are you conversant with the writings of Dr. Lilly?
Yes.
I wonder, what do you think of his
problem?
I'm sorry?
His problem?
No, his problems.
Yeah, he has
well, the gentleman seems to be doing quite well on his in retirement in Hawaii. I think he's, I don't know what his problems are. But what I wanted to know is, in the book where he wrote about the solid state entities, are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Do you think that was a delusion that for the listener's benefit, that he himself came to believe that there was a battle in the universe for what he called the solid-state entities that he was in contact with and who were demonstrating their power to him in various ways, that they were vying for control of the universe against carbon-based life forms. And he himself came to wonder if that was, in fact, truth or, in fact, a delusion.
Okay, now you notice that Lily surfaces in 1973, thanks to John Brockman, and when he went out to the Esalen Institute in the 72-73 period.
Now, are we going to get a history? Are we going to get an answer? What do you think about this?
What?
Do we have the answer before the elaboration? I really would like to know your opinion about whether the solid-state entities are vying for control of the universe against carbon-based life forms. I think that's kind of important to us, carbon-based life forms.
Yeah, my answer will be a technical answer. It won't be my personal point of view. It'll be the appropriate answer for this situation.
I just didn't want to filibuster here.
Right. No, it's all right. I don't want to. That's right. You can interrupt me at any point. But just to make it simple, the ground of his period is 1960-1977, the computer ground. And the effect of that is to implode the whole universe, all dimensions, not just our physical dimension. So he saw a battle between the other dimensions and the physical dimension that we have inherited, known as nature. And that dialectic is inevitable within the software communist environment of the computer technology. So he was looking at the dialectic of content, projecting his own problem of a dialectic within his personality. And he projected it accurately out of the model of the biocomputer. Remember that term he used in his writings?
Yeah, he coined it.
Yeah, the biocomputer is he realized that biology had merged with the new environment, which is the computer mythic stage from 1960 to 1977. But he didn't understand how that would be subsumed by the technological afterimage, which I call mythic stages. He did not know the stages before that when television was the ground. And so he got trapped in the effect of the computer environment. And all his metaphors mime the war, which is a theme that we keep bringing up this show, that every technology necessitates a new war. And he's right. The war between the astral dimensions and the carbon physical dimension is an effect of the computer environment, and that's why you had the battle of the mediums, Ramtha against cosmic awareness and against the evergreens and things like that, in that same period, which was lumped for the major media that makes the market. It was called New Age.
Well, I guess it's been a long time since I thought about the question. Something an earlier caller said or you said made me sort of think of that, and I thought I'd just try to poke my two bits worth in here just to stir the pot a little bit anyway.
Well, thank you. That's the essence of word making the market. We all, as discarnate super angels, make our situation we're living in. The audience rules now.
But I do think, my own impression right now, a real computer file, I really believe that what is happening is not a war between the solid state entities. But
yeah, not since 1977. It's gone into, you look at my chart, there's a battle of mythic stages, which goes retrieves all forms of historical environments. The computer just was the reflection between the astral and internal planes and the physical plane. That's been subsumed since 1977. And so to say what you said now is accurate, if you know the ground.
I'm not sure. Are you talking about a publication with your name on it?
Yeah, there's a CD called Bob's Medicology. There's two of them, and they have my liner notes and my essay to Prince Charles, a secret memo that he received years ago, and my charts, which give the context I'm talking in, the sort of semantic background.
Anyway, I'll get off and let somebody else have a shot. But I think really what I was starting to say was I really think what we're aiming for is a symbiosis and just an access to the total sum database of entire humanity at our fingertips, and I think it's really exciting, and people shouldn't be afraid.
Yeah, that's called Lockdown Bob Rule, and that's another meaning of Bob, how you just define it, instant access to everything.
Are we all going to have to learn to speak Dobbsies now in order to understand?
Yes, in public situations, when you're asked or polled, you talk Bobbies.
Okay, Dobbsies is going to be the Rosetta Stone that will bring all the consciousnesses together.
Beg your pardon? Say it again.
Dobbsies will be the Rosetta Stone that will allow us all to communicate, I guess.
Yes, to become aware of the collective consciousness that we're already communicating within.
All right, this is the Anti-Bob.
Thank you.
Signing off from beaming my impressions to Mount Wilson. Fare thee well.
Thank you.
By the way, did you know, Bob, there was a Ben Dobbs who was a commentator on KPFK over a decade ago?
Yes, I knew that. But he's not a relative.
Oh, he's not?
No.
Okay. Good morning, caller. You're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Hi, I have two questions. Bob, this is Internewt. I wanted to know if you were aware of the publications by Lawrence Blair, Rhythms of Vision.
No, I don't think so.
And there's also another very interesting book you should look into called Angel Flight.
That's the name of the book.
Talks about astral plane, super angel status, etc.
Yeah, but are they talking about the astral body on our physical level? You know, when we die, we go into the astral situation?
I thought it was a lot of mumbo-jumbo myself, but it seemed like maybe you could decipher it.
Right. If it's based on nature and people believe that we have other bodies, the subtle bodies, if it's talking about those that occult esoteric knowledge, then that has all been subsumed by the discarnate body we all are wearing right now, which is something that's post-astral body. Because when you have an astral body, you can be here and there, and you can go wherever you want, but you're only there when you get there. With the super angelic body, which we all wear with this mixed corp media environment, we are everywhere at the same time, which angels can't do.
On both ends of the telephone, I'm in your room, you're in my room, etc.
Yeah, and for the people who are tapping us, we're there. And it can be 5 billion people who are tapping us, so we are in that resonating space.
You're here at the radio station?
Not having visual boundary definitions.
You're on radios that are being tuned to this radio station?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm everywhere at the moment, huh?
That's right. And not just when you're on the phone, but even when you're off the phone, because you're inside the satellite environment.
Gotcha. Where do you think the Electronic Frontier Foundation fits into the software communism meta picture?
They fit in their proper niche.
Do you have dealings with them?
No.
Are you aware of what they're up to?
Yes.
Okay.
But, the Secret Council 10 has access and involvement with everything. You know, the popular metaphor is that the NSA monitors all international telemetric communications. Well, that's what one of the instruments that I use in the Secret Council 10, so it's not hard to monitor everything. So we're scanning these things all the time.
I think that there's, some hope in what Orwell pointed out. Probably the only bright spot in 1984 was that you can't have everybody watching everybody.
That's right.
That they have to do it somewhat randomly, that, you can't have enough watchdogs because who's watching the watchdogs, et cetera. So there is some privacy there somewhere.
And the disservice of that is that the crime must fit the punishment, which I had expressed on the last show. That, since it's random how we control the situation. And so if you get caught, it's unlucky.
Right.
And that's right. And you at the same time are free to run amok over anybody, and they're free to run amok over you, as I say in my first CD. And that's where we're in this ambiguous post-Orwellian situation where you are both free and a king, but at the same time, you can be a slave if we tap into your situation and decide to punish it.
Okay, last question. Does the real Bob Dobbs smoke a pipe?
No, that was my father.
Ah. Thank you, Bob.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you, caller. Here we go. But just before we go to the next caller, I have a question I want to ask you. There we go. I want to know if he's read these certain books. You still there?
Yes.
Okay. Have you read Hyperspace by Dr. Michio Kaku?
Yes.
Have you read A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking?
Yes.
Have you read Gute Lescher Bach, An Eternal Golden Braid by Douglas Hofstadter?
Yes.
What did you think of the dialogues in that last book?
Well, I think that they're retrievals of visual space with an acoustic bias, attempting to understand tactility.
Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Bob.
Yes.
My question is, I don't know if you've addressed this before, but what were you doing in the Twin Peaks series?
Well, that was David Lynch's celebration of me. All of David Lynch's work is a intuitive pickup on my situation. Eraserhead, that term itself is Manipian tactility. Constantly erasing the present and bringing a new image, whether it's sound or kinetic or visual. So Eraserhead, his first major movie, was a great term to describe my activity in the Secret Council of Ten. And then, what was the next one? Blue Velvet?
Okay.
Blue Velvet features the song Love Letter Straight from the Heart by Kitty Lester, which will be the opening song on the next installment of Furry Lint in 2 months. That song is a very personal song that Connie and I experienced in L.A. in the 70s on some oldie station. I remember I'd heard it in the 50s, but I forgot about it. And it was such a beautiful song, and it was very important for Connie and I that it was inevitable that David Lynch would use that song in Blue Velvet at a key point when you have the young star Kyle MacLachlan leaving a scene straight out of Secret Council of Ten assassination activities. All right, so that movie has a direct reference to me. And then when you get into the Bob series, that's all about Lockdown Bob Rule and how we cannot escape the discarnate possession and vampire activity of this super angelic environment we've created. We've all created it through our own history. And that's the meaning of that TV series where even Cooper, at the end, gets possessed by Bob. But there's more to come. But basically, the logo that Frost and Lynch used in that series of the sparkling electrical system, it's almost like the arc light on the first page of Finnegan's Wake, that early electrical technology, that vibrating electric environment is a symbol for his productions, is his logo that refers to me. But the whole series projects a negative view of Bob, or of the disservices of Lockdown Bob Rule. So David Lynch is one of the major artists celebrating the inevitability of what I'm going to be doing.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You seem to have stunned my audience into silence, Bob. There is not one caller to talk to you on the air. The number is 818-985-5735. It's 7:59, so let me tell you that this is KPFK Los Angeles. My name is David Porter, and we're doing something different this morning. We're not doing music. We're talking with Bob Dobbs. Let me just tell you also, if you want to get some information on Bob, the L.A. Connection, call 310 area code, 306-7330, and next week my guest will be Steve Probst, and we're going to be doing a 2.5-hour program on early rock and roll rhythm and blues from L.A., from I think the late 40s or early 50s up through the early 60s. So we're going from Bob to early R&B in just 1 week. Oh, we have four callers here. Okay. You're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
This is short. No one seemed to answer Bob's question about the crop circles, so I'll just give him a quick trick on Jingle.
Okay.
One is, it's evolution of human consciousness.
That's what it amplifies?
It enhances.
Right.
And it retrieves a central myth for civilization. And it obsolesces human androcentrism, and it flips into Lockdown Bob Rule.
Okay, I won't quibble with that. But that's good. They made an effort on doing a tetrad, but the question is the tetrad accurate, and can tetrads be done? You're supposing a tetrad can be done, and that's your answer to my question. But I don't know, or I can't release yet, the answer to whether they are part of nature and can have tetrads done on them. But that was a good attempt on the level of interpreting that they are a tetrad, or an environment that became tetraded, or connected to human reality. So that's a brave probe and proposal, but if you're still there, what do you think of the question whether they can be tetraded?
Well, he's not there. His brave new answer is come and gone. Okay, caller, you're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just heard the other caller talking about Twin Peaks, and I realized that a long time before that Bob was basically the ruler of that TV show.
Yeah, do you know what Bob is?
I know what Bob is supposed to be.
What?
What he is right now and what he's supposed to be.
In Twin Peaks.
Bob is... In Twin Peaks, Bob is supposed to be gee, what is he supposed to be in Twin Peaks?
Yeah, I'm asking. You can't say?
Well, Bob is supposed to be the kind of the incubus, the guy that creeps up on you and grabs you when you're not looking. And most of the universe so far is not looking.
Yeah, well, if you think of the news, that's what the news does to you. the news comes up and grabs you when you're not looking.
When you're not looking, yeah.
So Bob is the electric environment, the word that makes the market. He is mixed corporate media or Manipian tactility.
Right.
It's an image, an anthropomorphic image of the fact that we all live in this situation that has entrapped us.
Right, and the images all through Twin Peaks are of flickering lights.
That's right. That's the electric environment,
right.
You know, in a visual sense.
I wanted to call you about the crop circles. I wasn't quite sure about the thesis you were presenting about that, and I wanted you to repeat that.
Yeah, the basic point is that the tetrad can only be done to human-made artifacts. And the tetrad is an analysis, a cultural interpretation of what any environment or artifact will do to humans. Now, I'm asking, can we do tetrads on the crop circles? Because since you can't do a tetrad on nature and only on man-made nature, then if we do a tetrad on the crop circle, we won't know if it's accurate until we have contact with the thing that makes them or the entities that do it. And we will have to decide whether they're part of nature or not. If they're not part of nature and we can do a tetrad on them, then they're somehow connected to us. Or they're a human-made artifact. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well,
that's my question.
The crop circles are a communication, but it's a one-sided communication. We don't have, there's not a dual path going there.
Yeah, it's not an electrical interaction, which goes
right
back to Mark's point, the very first question, and relates to this guy, this caller's saying that it retrieves central myth. Now, centralization is a process of one way. It's a one-way song, to quote Wyndham Lewis. In other words, centralized authority is not interactive. So this, is, since it is not an interactive medium of communication, then it does enhance a central myth. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and it's not interactive yet. We have a long way to go.
That's right.
You probably can't do a tetrad analysis of it right now based on the information we have.
Well, I have the information, and I've talked to the entities that make the crop circles, and you can, from that phone number, you could get tapes of the dialogues I had with the entities, and they're from the Bootes constellation. That's where they're from, the ones who are making the crop circles. And this may sound amazing, but you can actually hear my interactions with those entities that make the crop circles on all kinds of topics.
You interact with them vocally?
Yeah, that's what Stang referred to when he said the Exus has landed, or Exus will land on July 5th, 1998. He didn't know it happened in early 1988, which helped set up the situation of Lockdown Bob Rule. And I played for 3 years tapes of my private conversations with them. Now, that may sound amazing, but that's what it's like on the Secret Council of Ten, and you can actually get tapes of those dialogues.
Because the thing I understood about most of those entities, and of course I do a little bit of research, but I have no idea what all the different entities are, but I understand that most of the entities basically dealt with people who thought transference, and I thought that was an interesting hypothesis for trying to, you know, decide where they would fit, whether they're part of nature or part of man, because they seem to communicate directly.
That's right. Now, thought is an interesting phenomenon. That's what LaRouche represents, the school of thinking itself, the power of thinking,
right,
in my book. But the thing is that they are physical entities in the sense they're in our universe. They will be physically available to us when they make the connection through the, once the crop circles is understood, and they're from the Bootes constellation. So they are in our physical dimension. Now, they also have other ways of ESP.
Right.
But at the same time, the idea of thinking through thought and ESP is a natural adjunct to the computerized environment because we have subsumed the astral plane. So ESP is inevitable. But we have to realize, as Marshall McLuhan said in his book, Take Today, The Executive is Dropout, ESP is old hat when effects precede causes. The hologramic environment is not a physical environment for us right now, but the effects of it are here. And those effects were from 1977 to 1990. So the effects of environments are something that simple ESP, which is based on matching your mind with someone else's mind, that ignores the fact we're in an electric environment where we're making perceptions, or in simple terms, we're hallucinating now. We are all hallucinating with our own universes.
Right.
And that's
so,
why...
So all the messages are garbled.
That's right. And if we keep trying to match them, then we will not understand Finnegan's Wake. If we understand the making process, then we actually can slip between the cracks, slip between the spaces of tactility, and communicate. And maybe match a little bit.
Yeah. One last thing, just to let you know, most recent Omni that came out, have you seen that? It's a big article, about three articles about UFO conspiracy, about Russian UFO research, abductees and junk. Just came out April.
Well, that's the problem is the Tom Touche faction of the Secret Council 10 is projecting, and they use Bill Cooper, you know, the talk show, the electric circuit man, Bill Cooper talked about MJ-12 and things like that. This is the metaphor of Agent Cooper in time in Twin Peaks.
That's true. It's so weird. It just comes around again and again.
Yeah, well, that's I have ESP on a national level.
Actually, somebody asked them that, maybe not.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's a satire on Bill Cooper. See, this is where Lynch supports me versus Tom Touche. Tom Touche and entities in the military around the world are going to project the idea that these aliens are a threat to us, the new stranger, the thing we should be paranoid about. And that's the only level that they can control the transition to lockdown Bob Rule. Now, I keep emphasizing that there's only been three people who've been abducted, the Barney Hill couple, and two others that have not told anybody. All this other abductee stuff is nonsense, enhanced by the Tom Touche faction and the Bill Cooper gang to make people paranoid, whereas the booties people are not a threat to us. I mean, with me in this situation, they're not going to be a threat, and even if they were, I'd be able to control it. But I also tell you that they're not a threat, and we should not be paranoid, and Omni and Penthouse will put out stupid articles about this stuff, and this is a disservice, because it's going to make people paranoid. This is why you get these TV shows, you know, the yellow journalistic shows about sightings and things. There's a heavy paranoid tone to the music of their shows.
So you think Strieber is full of it?
Yeah. There's no paranoia. See, this is the problem. The only problem that the booties have when they make contact is whether, this is what they had to think through the 80s, to come before the cataclysm or to come after it. Because if they come before, they're blamed for causing it. If they come after, then we say, why didn't you come before and save us? That is the dilemma they have. So they have to sort of communicate with us while we're in the middle of this political and collapse of mythic stage situation since 1990, this cataclysm on all levels that we're in right now. They have to start to begin to communicate and operate in the interview and sort of maybe, I say interview, operate in the interval between maybe showing up before the cataclysm or after it. They've got to play it really careful.
Yeah, because have you heard about this guy, Norio Hayakawa? He goes around talking about the cataclysm and how it relates to UFOs.
That's wrong. See, the thing is, if you connect cataclysm with UFOs, then you're a disservice. The UFOs have nothing to do with the cataclysm. This cataclysm we made and brought on ourselves. But, of course, the collective, as Joyce says on page about 112, spinning his wake, lead kindly foul. Foul being a pun on the French word for crowd, F-O-U-L-E. Also a pun on F-O-O-L. The group mind, the group archetype, is always stubborn and stupid and will always lash out. It's like tribal warfare. So we have to deal with the fact that we will interpret this new lockdown Bob Rule situation like that. And we've got to overcome that. Or half of us have to overcome it.
That's true. If you ever get a chance to hear this guy, Norio Hayakawa, I don't think he's completely
paranoid.
What would you say?
Paranoid.
Paranoid, but he's definitely on to it. And
okay,
I don't
he's on to the relationship of them showing up at some kind of cataclysmic point.
Right, and it's being orchestrated. It's not. It's being orchestrated by governments, et cetera, et cetera, to institute some kind of a lockdown, but I didn't. He of course, does not relate it to lockdown Bob Rule in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Okay, well, I'll try to monitor him. I'll check him out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Okay, let me remind you, this is KPFK Los Angeles. I'm David Porter, and this week we're on the phone with Bob Dobbs.
And now, according to my clock, it's 11:11.
Well, it's 8:11 here. Let me just ask you a couple of questions here.
But 11:11 evokes another movement that comes out of southwest United States. Have you heard of the 11:11 woman?
No.
No, she's tapping into the 22 phenomenon, but she thinks it's split into 11:11.
Well, here, I'm going to turn my tape over here. I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Glad I have two tape decks here. On the Twin Peaks thing, the thing I really liked was the general atmosphere is whenever they're in the Red Room, the Black Lodge.
Yes.
The way they had to shoot it and act it out was to learn the dialogue backwards. So
yes.
When it was shown backwards, the dialogue was forwards, but with a very strange, stilted quality. Also, do you remember the scene where Cooper...
Now, Dave, that's acoustic space being manipulated visually and acoustically. The effects are visual and acoustic. He's trying to express tactility, which is neither sight or sound, by doing that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. But there was another thing where Cooper is served a cup of coffee, and it turns from regular coffee into iced coffee and then an oily viscous liquid.
Right, and that means what to you?
No, I just thought it was an interesting effect.
Yeah, it's like that patient who died in California a few weeks ago and the fumes coming out of her killed a few other people or affected other people.
Yes, and also, what do you think the significance is of the one-armed man and the dwarf, which is his arm, and the giant?
Well, Frank Zappa was onto that. Remember he had a song on Chunga's Revenge, or Weasels Rip My Flesh, about the dwarf nebulae?
Yeah, that was Weasels.
The toads of the short...
Yes.
Short Forest?
Yes.
Do you remember those images?
Yes.
Well, I know that Lynch is very influenced by Zappa's imagery. And I'm just going to say that amount. I would throw it out in the audience to see if someone could enhance your question, and then I can respond to that, because I get too sidetracked explaining that.
Okay, well, we got about 60 minutes left, and you're the lucky one who's on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Yeah, I have a question for the wise one.
Not that wise.
Yeah.
Wisdom's obsolete.
Well,
it's no longer seeing or hearing is believing, it's feeling is believing. I'm very good at feeling, which is not necessarily traditional acoustic or visual wisdom.
You know, you mentioned about the two unnamed people that were abducted.
Yeah, the two unknown people. Are you one of them?
No, Ayatollah Khomeini was one of them. And he's going to come back to America and establish an Iranian Islamic State here.
That's a possibility.
Because we're all getting ready for his coming back.
Well, that's an appropriate investment of your time and projection of the future, because that's entirely possible in the confusing situation we're in now.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you, caller. I think we could do with less religious nuts. And why can't your secret council attend do something about them?
They are part of the expression and metaphor of... phrase, lead timely fool. You see, you got to realize that humanity, because it's cut off from spirit on a certain level, and I don't want to get Gnostic or get into that split mentality, but there is a fact that the human dimension, like language, is a probe beyond the angelic spiritual realm. And we are always, as humans, going to be stubborn and reverse and parody whatever situation we're in, including parodying and making fun of God.
Okay,
so God will always do that. We'll always have that factor in our consciousness, and tetrad management includes that.
Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
All right. Experimenting with acoustic space here this morning.
Yes. Quite well, remember, it's tactile, really. The electric environment is tactile.
Yeah, but I know now why people get awful choked up when they do this.
Beg your pardon?
I know why people get choked up when they try to respond to you in this mode.
Yeah, there's no sense of your identity. Your identity is blurred, right?
Exactly. Well, I'm thankful to you and Dave for all the Frank Zappa music that has been over the airwaves in the last months and years. And in particular, Dave, your show on December 4th featured the Yellow Shark music.
Yes.
And I was wondering how could I go about finding that. Since the earthquake, Pumpkin is been having some difficulties, and I understand from Dr. Demento's show that Rhino is going to be handling his catalog. Is that correct?
I am not sure. I wasn't aware that CD wasn't available at like Tower in places.
Well, I'm up here in Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh.
We're really out in the boonies when it comes to Frank Zappa music.
Now, I heard rumors to the effect that Gail has put a hold on the renting out and the distribution of the music for the Yellow Shark, so it cannot be performed. And also, I've heard that Civilization Phase 3 and 4, the double CD that was due out sometime this spring, has now been pushed away till next spring, 1995. And I don't understand why, but these are the rumors that I'm hearing.
Maybe it's that Nazi connection again.
Well, maybe it's also because of the marketability.
Yeah. No, I'm just being punny about that. But that was quite a coincidence that you played that on Frank's last day here on Earth.
Well, I didn't know that, and it had been played also on, I didn't find this out till later, John Schneider had played it on December 3rd.
But that was quite a weekend. I heard an interview on the BBC over shortwave on Monday the 6th. Charles Shaw Murray was interviewed about Zappa. Do you or Bob know anything about him, Charles Shaw Murray?
Yeah, he's an old friend of Frank, and he does competent interviews. And let's remember, December 5th was Dweezil's birthday.
Uh-huh. Now, is Charles Shaw Murray's his writings available here in California?
I don't think so.
No? Uh-huh. Okay. He was an interesting sort of interview.
Did he put a book out?
Pardon me?
Did he put a book out?
I'm having interruptions here in the signal.
Yeah, did Murray put a book out?
Didn't mention that. It was at the end of the BBC News Hour. By the way, BBC has been more difficult to pick up here in on the West Coast. Does that have anything to do with Radio Moscow? I'm getting a lot of interference from their stations on shortwave.
No.
Is that a realm that you don't deal with too much?
No, I know all about that, and that's not the factor.
Uh-huh. Okay, maybe just my receiver here.
Yes.
Okay, thank you again for the show, and hope to hear from you again in 2 months.
Okay.
Thank
you. There'll be Zappa on that.
Yes.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, David Porter and Bob Dobbs. I've been really enjoying the program, and I appreciate you being on, and I hope you have Bob on again.
You'll be on in 2 months and in 4 months.
Excellent. I'll look forward to listening to you. At first, when listening to the program, I was thinking to myself, what is this man talking about? Because I wasn't familiar with Bob Dobbs per se. But then all of a sudden things started coalescing and started putting things together. Another question I'd like to get some feedback on this about the this electronic revolution and the sound that it produces. It seems that there is a tremendous amount of noise in the air. It kind of is annoying at times. And I'm wondering if you're experiencing it or, you know, your feeling on this.
Wait, caller, are you talking about noise in the broadcast or when
you're out
in the street?
Electronic noise. It's almost as if there is a tremendous amount of electricity and communication that's going on, and it is being, it's going through us all. Maybe that's transmitted or we're transmitting.
Take it, Bob.
Okay, caller, are you saying you have listened to more than one show?
No.
This is your first show?
No. I've listened to David Porter, but I've not actually heard Bob's show per se. I've heard the information in different ways.
Right. This is the first time you've heard me.
Right.
Okay.
But I do know plenty of Bob's.
Okay. I would say this is, in answer to your question, the way you would visualize tactility, which electricity is an expression of, an extension of, a metaphor of, is you take a piece of paper and draw a square. That white zone inside the square is tactility. Now, it is not what it appears. It equals and is meant to represent the interval, the resonant interval, which is equal to the situation of darkness in relation to visible space.
Mm-hmm.
That interval between darkness and visible space, which is the same as silence is to sound. Those two relationships are metaphors or equal to the shape of tactility. Just like the color white is supposed to represent all colors at once.
Mm-hmm.
And then think of some term that represents all times. That is what tactility is. It's a relationship between darkness and space, silence and sound, color and all color as white. Now, we've extended that with the electric environment. That's the situation we're in. So you can't visualize it, you can't hear it, but you can feel it. We already can feel our electrical bodies. Now, what you're picking up now is the electric environment, which is in a mechanical environment. You're feeling the feelingness of electricity enhanced. So the idea that you're being penetrated by beams is not an accurate expression of tactility, because in the tactile interval, you are in touch with everything, and yet you're not existent or visualizable. It's like, you know, the Zen void. You can't see tactility, you can't hear it, but you can feel it. And so tactility, when it is enhanced by the electric environment, our feelings are enhanced. So you are picking up the electrical tactile interval in feeling intensity. And if biology looked at that and tries to analyze it in biological terms, like the book The Body Electric, it can say, well, this is destructive to the cells. But if you realize that you're more than your cells in these other levels, then that paradigm is not appropriate. But as long as you feel, and this is like John Lilly's battle between the carbon-based entities and the solid-state entities, as long as you feel your carbon-based and use that metaphor in your subconscious, you'll feel threatened by the permeability of the tactile electric environment. So you get the feeling, but don't worry about it.
Right. The only thing is, I'm kind of clued into that, and the information that I have been receiving through all of the different types of media.
Now, those would be all inadequate, because all information on that level is visual, acoustic, or kinetic, right? So all those forms of information would not adequately express the feeling you're getting. So be careful of translating into other media information. But go ahead. So in terms of you're getting that this other media stuff.
Right. I was just curious about the fact that it's uncomfortable at times. It's actually too noisy.
That's right. I mean, it's too
and I
bright.
Like what you said about escaping from that. And I was thinking about the Mueller-Lyer line and arrows. Are you familiar? I'm sure you're familiar with the Mueller-Lyer. It's kind of a play with lines and space.
Yes.
And one part of it is enclosed. The other part, half, is open.
Yes.
To the side, to in one dimension.
That's right. It's difficult to visualize tactility, and that's a futile attempt, but it's approximating it.
Right. And, yeah, I think that's what I struggle with, is approximating what is going on.
Right. Well, I'm saying that the collective consciousness that Lockdown Bob Rule means that we will feel the appropriate time to turn off the television or computerized environment collectively, so that we, in general, don't feel that intensity that you're talking about. That is an irritation.
Yeah.
But as long as Tom Touché prevents me from implementing this situation, then you're going to have to use my interviews, like on Dave's show here, to remind you of the understanding of how to take this punishment.
We got 5 minutes. I'd like to move on.
Oh, one other question. So just the kind of a universal question, and I'm going to hang up. How do you cope with this? So long.
Well, Connie helps. I don't know if you heard that. I'll say it again. Connie helps.
Yeah. By the way, there's something interesting here. Speaking of numbers, the transmitter reader is stuck on 383, and it's a square 8, so it kind of looks like B-O-B. Okay, let's see. Who's going to be the lucky one? Caller, you're lucky. You're on the air.
All right. Okay, I have only heard about Bob this morning, and then I think I saw a comic book a while ago that sort of spoofed all religions.
That's the Stang book.
Yeah, that's the book of subgenius.
Right, that's what, okay.
That's an interpretation of me, but it's
but
not.
But that's not what I was going to ask about. I was just giving a little history. And then this morning I've only been listening since the guy who claimed to be broadcasting his signal directly rather than calling.
The anti-Bob.
Exactly. So anyway, I was going to make a statement and then ask a question. The statement is having to do with communication on a mass level, and it's actually been going on a long time before radio was invented, or any mass media, or humanity even.
Yeah, well, speech is a mass medium.
Yeah, huh?
Speech is a mass medium.
I have been.
Beg your pardon?
I have been.
Has been. But yes, ESP is a mass medium.
Yes, and so is DNA, and so is just, and memes, and so is just basically communication between everything. It's always going on anyway. You know, I mean, in reality, things do affect one another. It's just now that it can happen a lot quicker. for instance, now the people who are listening to me who don't know me hear every word exactly the way I'm saying it. And in his earlier in history, they would have had to have probably heard somebody as a go-between who echoed my ideas with their own color and filter. Anyway, then I was going to ask, what does the word term tactility actually have to do with the sense of touch, which, or the tactile sense, or is it completely different?
No, it is the term for the sense of touch. And the sense of touch is the sense of pressure and interval. Part of touch is you press something, but you also release your hand from it. And that flexibility is the essence of tactility. Kinetic pressure, you know, movement of your muscles is just one kind of thing that involves letting go, but it's not like the hand. The hand is the instrument of tactility in the sense that we can hold and let go.
Mm-hmm.
And tactile, you have to emphasize the interval more than the pressure aspect of touch. Most people, especially coming out of the industrial age, have the bias that touch is pressure. But if you couldn't let go, then what you pressed, you'd be stuck to.
Like your own guts.
Beg your pardon?
Like your own guts. You don't feel them even though they're all touching because you can't let go of your guts.
Well, the tactile sense involves all the senses, and the gut is what we call the proprioceptive sense, which is sort of like the movement. But yes, it's very close to tactile. It's a fine-tuning sense, a fine-tuned sense that approximates tactility. But tactile and tactility means the interrelationship of all the senses.
So you're also saying that it's the ability to pick and choose from your environment.
Which is what your brain does.
Right. Okay.
Your brain organizes the sensory input through the various senses and creates a coherent consciousness. The sense that does that, it's like a switchboard, but I don't want to get too mechanical.
Well, that makes sense.
It's like a switchboard that interrelates all the senses. That, the sense that does that, and it is a sense, is tactile and is tactility. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a switchboard, like I am.
Sure, that makes sense. Okay, now I get it.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye. Well, we got about 1 minute. So, caller, can you, caller, give us a one-minute question?
Yes, I can. Explain the prophecy to the Bible, if you can.
Okay. The prophecy...
In 1 minute, Bob.
The prophecy in the Bible is expressed by this situation. Bernard Nussbaum, on March 5th, 1974, with Hillary Clinton as his associate, in the middle of Watergate, was given the job of delivering the subpoena to the White House for the tapes and for certain documents in Watergate. Bernard Nussbaum was given that job on March 5th, 1974. On March 5th, 1994, he had to resign because of his involvement in Whitewater or whatever the scandal is that's unfolding in the White House. That's 20 years to the day. That's biblical prophecy to me.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for today, Bob. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Dave.
And we'll hear you in 2 months.
Yes, part three of Furry Lent, which has some Frank Zappa on it, even though the last one had a bit of Zappa.
Okay.
He's 200 years old.
Yep, got to go.
Talk to you later, Dave.
Bye. And I'm David Porter with Genesis of Music. Next week, Steve Probst will be here with me via the magic of magnetic tape, listening to early rock and roll and rhythm and blues from the L.A. area. Take care and stay tuned for John Davis.